You are listening to In Response, a legacy podcast. A show where three handsome guys talk about their favorite Magic the Gathering format, Legacy. This show is brought to you by QueerNessAtAnyCost.com and Austrian-Legacy.com. You can support the show at patreon.com/response_legacy. And now, lean back and enjoy.
Welcome to episode 65, Who's the Killer of
In Response,
a legacy podcast.
I'm Peter Plank.
And I'm Philipp Klein. And we're talking about
legacy
most of the time. Yeah, as you can all hear, we're again on the two-thirds of the cast. This time Daniel is sick, unfortunately, or is ill. Yeah. Sometimes these things happen. I mean, it's very unfortunate, but nevertheless, we're here to bring you some interesting news about the meta and interesting things that happen around, yeah, pretty much the Magic world, basically. So, Peter, what made a huge waves the last days ago?
I mean, we're talking about legacy, so we of course have to talk about the Legacy European Championship, because at their last event, I believe, there was a big discussion basically about a shuffling technique in the third round against Canister. There was like a player shuffling his deck, fetching for a Godless Shrine, and yeah, while shuffling through the deck, he put the Grief up and up in the deck onto the top of the deck and then shuffled. But there was a ruling that it was not a fault and not a cheat.
Wait, what? How can shuffle cheat be not a cheat here? I mean, that's insane. I mean, this person was caught on camera red-handed, am I right?
Basically, there is a little bit of an intricacy about if something is a cheat or if you are gaining an advantage while doing something off the game, basically. And I think there has to be an advantage gained. There has to be intent to do it and something third.
It doesn't matter.
and here it was like there was no advantage gained because, like, of course, Canister cut the deck, but also the player itself presented the deck fairly well to Canister, not to put it onto the side, and I hope he forgets to cut. But also in the second iteration of shuffling, the top card changed.
Okay. Yeah, so basically all these card stacking, card shuffling was pretty much,
useless.
Unnecessary, useless, yeah, basically.
And we don't even know if you wanted to stack it up there because it would have been a very bad draw.
Okay, well, I mean, what you could argue would be that the person didn't want to draw that card. If you say it's a bad card to draw in that matchup, I mean, maybe you could make a cheating case here for putting it intentionally to the top and then let your opponent cut it so you don't draw it. I mean, but the more that I think of this, they only cut the one card to top. Am I right? Put the one card to the top.
It was only one card. Yeah.
Okay. And that doesn't really make sense. I mean, if I wanted to improve my draws, then maybe I would have. I would have put more cards that I didn't want to draw to the top and then let my opponent cut it.
Yeah.
If I wanted to do the shuffle cheat, I mean,
It would have been an on-camera shuffle cheat for an advantage for, like, so little percentage points. It would have been kind of insane to do it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of get it now, the ruling of the judges here. I mean, I can understand it. I probably think that's maybe due to bad habits or something like that.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a discussion about like unclumping cards, but I believe it did not see any griefs nearby the grief that was put away. And yeah, at first it looks really, really bad for the player, but if you look into it more often,
more closely,
yeah, it looks not really good, but not that shady as it looked at the first glance.
I mean, I think you can give him here the benefit of the doubt, actually, because for me there seems no real malice here, no ill intent. So, yeah, maybe it's just bad habits.
Yeah, and for example, before you play a game or something like that, before the first game, if you see like three lightning bolts stuck together in your deck, the first one should throw the rock if you don't place two bolts on any other sides of
everyone,
the deck.
Everyone basically unclumps their deck or... that's some kind of... I don't want to say deck staking, but it's just... You don't want to have clumps and then just shuffle it, and everybody knows that it's just useless, but it just kind of calms the yeah. brain or something like that. Yeah. It's just these kinds of bad habits all come into our ways as a player.
How do you put in your sideboard cards?
Wait, what do you mean?
You go through your deck. You will put in six cards from a sideboard into your deck. Will you put all the six cards onto the bottom of your deck, the top of your deck, or like one between each 10 cards?
Yeah, everyone just puts them in randomly or stacks them randomly into their deck. So everybody is basically accused here of deck stacking. Yeah, no one that I know. Doesn't do it like that, because the proper kind of way would be like smash all your 15 cards together, yeah. or your 75 together, and then pull out the cards that you don't need after some random shuffling. That would be basically the best kind of not deck stacking here, yeah. But everyone just grabs the 4 to 5 sideboard cards, just puts it in randomly. Because I don't want them to clump.
Yeah, you want to have the chance to draw one of the sideboard cards, not none or five of those.
Yeah, basically. I mean, everything is just useless here, because you randomize it afterwards.
Yeah.
Or you should randomize it afterwards.
You should randomize it enough, is I think the real thing to say,
because
like one or two shuffles would make this method quite effective, but if you shuffle your deck like 6, 7, 8 times,
yeah, I think the golden number here is 7.
It's
yeah,
7, yeah.
Seven riffle or 7 mesh shuffles, something like that, and
after 7 shuffles, the card magician's 7 is the golden rule for yeah. the perfect shuffling.
Yeah, that's basically the most randomized number, and after that you have diminishing returns or something. Yeah.
So
with that out of our way, we can thank our patrons.
So thank you, three small little guys. We want to really thank you for supporting the channel, to keep it running. Thank you, Chinonoids, Matt Duncan and Moritz.
Thank you very much. It's great to have you here. If you want to support us, you can do this on patreon.com/response_legacy. And you can find us, as always, on Twitter. It's response_legacy. Yeah, and with this, I think I also make a little shout out for our second hobby. For the Austrian Legacy League, we are doing another iteration of the Austrian Legacy Masters this July, end of July, 26th to 28th of July, and 3 days of magic. So Friday Night Magic on Friday, then the Austrian Legacy Masters main event on Saturday, and following up with the Austrian Legacy Seasons and Tournament on Sunday, which is, yeah, basically you can get two European Legacy Masters slots at this weekend,
yeah.
One for Saturday and one for Sunday.
Exactly. It should be kind of like, yeah, last year it was a very, very well-received event. I think from the player base, we had like a 2K on Saturday, and I think it was like a 0.7K on Sunday.
Almost a 1K, yeah.
Almost a 1K, and yeah, it was a great experience for us. We three commentated over the whole weekend from the warm-up FNM on Friday up to the main event. And also the Sunday's event. And I think everything went pretty, pretty great. And yeah, it was like awesome having guys here from Italy, Germany, the Slovakian guys were here, the Czech guys were here, the Hungarian guys were here. We had like a French dude, one from Scandinavia, I think a Finnish guy. And I mean, it was great.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, this was probably the best event that we ever had, or maybe the best event that we ever
did
organized ourselves. So, yeah, but yeah, just follow us on our social media, Austrian_legacy, and to find out everything about the event. The pre-registration will start something about the February, mid to February, something like that. So keep your eye out, keep your eyes open, and look out for informations.
Information will come from all of our social media channels. So if you are linked through Philip's, Daniel's, mine, or the podcast one, or the Austrian Legacy League one, you will find the announcement. We make sure of that.
For sure. And now we can go to the main topic of our episode this time, which is...
Who's the killer?
Murders at Carlov Manor. At the moment, you're probably making yourself getting ready for the pre-release, because this is what happens today, actually.
Is today pre-release? Yeah.
When this episode airs, it's today, because it's
today,
Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. Which could have been one of the FNMs I would have had maybe time to go to. But
well, yeah.
It's a pre-release one.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, I haven't played in 2 months because of teaching duties and a lot of work stuff. And then last weekend I had my last day in teaching. And now I could play an FNM, I could play Legacy, I could throw my deck together and just dredge people out, yeah? And then it's pre-release. But yeah. That being said, I mean, the set looks awesome, actually. I always was a lover of Ravnica, because when I first got my hooray into competitive Magic, that was the first Ravnica block. And this set just really got to me. It was so intense, so well thought out. I even read the books. I even read the Ravnica books, and I have them at home.
You were a geek.
A little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the Ravnica the Plane is great. The storytelling there is always kind of fascinating. And for myself, I'm a huge fan of like detective movies and stuff like that.
Oh, really?
or
okay.
Crime scenes, and having like Ravnica in a Cluedo crime scene setting, it's kind of interesting. And I think there are a lot of really, really cute cards. And I mean, I read something about the meme, if like, you know, something was really, really big, but 2 years later a Magic set makes something about it, and we have like the Killer Among Us, which is basically a reference to like
Among Us,
the game. So yeah, Magic always is 2 years late to the joke.
2 years?
It should be more really? Like three.
Yeah, 3 to 4, something like that. I mean, it was COVID, and COVID is just just
it's nearly four
it's
years
a time
ago.
Machine, yeah.
It's kind of insane how time fares, but yeah, Magic made an original reference to it. But I think the first big point in the set that we kind of want or should talk about is like
the mana base.
The mana base. Because it's like the thing that we start off when building a deck. And the thing here is we have now kind of fetchable temples, but they surveil. And we got the whole cycle in one set.
Actually, that's something I really love about this set this year, that we got the whole cycle. It's not a partial cycle. You don't have to wait for anything. You can just get all 10 in one go. And I really like that these are always entering the battlefield tapped, so they have a huge downside. And the temples were always kind of I'm unsure about Legacy here, but sometimes they were like, if they were fetchable, then I would maybe try one.
Yeah.
Because the surveil can be a little bit, I don't want to say awkward, but a little bit fixing here. Because you could brainstorm and then fetch to some of these surveil lands and just put the bad card away.
Yeah, for example, I've read some comments, I think, from Twinless Twin on Twitter. It was like they are testing in Blue-Red Murktide in Modern the temple as a one-off. Because it's like really great, because it makes all of your fetch lands better for one card that is worse in your deck.
Well, yeah, I can see this. It's like the same in Legacy, where you play the Steam Vent.
Yeah.
Because you can't play 5 Volcanic Island. It doesn't work. Yeah. I don't think these cards or this temple will make waves in Legacy, especially not in Delver, because the slot is taken by Mystic Sanctuary here, and the Steam Vent, which is just miles ahead. But for Modern or even Pioneer doesn't have fetches, am I right? No.
For example, in something like Green-White Depths or Upson Depths, I can see the upside of having like one of those cards, because you can use your, how is it called? The 3-drop that grows with lands in graveyard.
The card with landfall. No, get the clues.
No. Knight of the Reliquary, exactly.
Okay, yeah.
Because, like, Knight gets a fetch land, then you fetch down to this. You can even sack the surveil land again because it's a plane or a forest. So it's really great.
Yeah, it's one of, maybe I can see this. I think these decks are kind of packed already, and I don't know if there really is room for it.
Yeah.
But I think time will tell. These are at least some kind of better budget options. If you need something like that for control, maybe.
I mean, Dust Lands.
Back then we played Prairie Stream in Miracles, yeah. When
that's true.
Yeah, you had two Tundras or one Tundra in the Prairie Stream. Or even only Prairie Stream. And in my opinion, these just seem better.
Yeah.
Than these Zendikar Tango Lands was the name, I think, because it takes two to tango or something.
Would be a nice reference. Yeah, it's like They're sweet on the one hand. Maybe lands plays. Does lands play Field of the Dead?
Yeah, lands plays Field of. I mean, there are lists with Field of the Dead, and these also play this Sheltered Thicket, which is also
which you can cycle for two.
Yeah, which you can cycle for two, and
yeah.
I mean, this could be
maybe
also a contender for the slot. No. I don't want to say it's better or it's worse or something. It's a contender for that slot.
Yeah, I can see it's being played mostly in like crop rotation decks.
Crop rotation decks, slower decks, decks that can search or two to the lands.
and want additional copies of them.
Or need other names for Field of the Dead.
And because we're talking about lands, the next card that we looked at is a sweet one. It's a detective for one and the green. And it's 1/3. It's an elf detective. When it comes into play, you mill 3 cards. And there was a card with exactly the mana cost and everything that is printed now as ability onto the creature, which is 3 and a green. You can sacrifice the creature without tapping it. Important, so you can do it for 6 mana on the same turn. Return all land cards from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. And this one can see play in before mentioned, like maybe lands when you want it, maybe green post.
In my opinion, I mostly can see this in a Hogak shell. Because with the green, or Hogak plays typically green for Dryad Arbors and Satyr Wayfinder. And this is like, for me, it seems like a better Satyr Wayfinder, because you mill, I think, the same amount of cards. Satyr Wayfinder gets the top 4, you get a land card in your hand and mill 3. This also mills 3. And Hogak sometimes needs ways to just get a Hogak out of the grave. Mm-hmm. And therefore you would need something that has a self-sacrifice clause. Like if you have 2 bridges in the graveyard.
Yeah.
And no other creature, just this one, or the zombie that can sacrifice itself, that says sacrifice a creature, get a +1/+1 counter. I don't know the name right now.
Karen Feeder,
yeah. These kind of cards can make 2 bodies under the right circumstances, which will then allow you to cast your Hogak from the grave and just keep on winning, basically. I get that it's really mana intensive, but I think it needs at least some exploration here in this in this kind of deck.
I think it can see some play. It's kind of like the Ramunap Excavator slot. Decks with green Sansenia, like green post, where you can get it and then recycle it to get your cards back, or you get a second shot at Morrowed Large or something like that. There are some sweet applications for it.
Yeah, and what's really great here is that the sacrifice clause doesn't say your turn. So many cards today say your turn or as a sorcery or sorcery speed only, and you can always attack with it, sacrifice it at your opponent's end step, or block with it and sacrifice it, and then just get Dark Depths Tespin stage back, and then in your turn you can make a Marid Large.
Or you can do it in response to surgically, in response to basically, if the surgical, because you are, you have so many applications for it. It's an instant speed is kind of great for it. Yeah, I mean, it comes into play tapped, but
the lands come into play tapped. Yeah,
but yeah, I think the card can do some stuff. It won't be a 4/4 in any deck, most likely not, but I can see it as a. As a one-off in some.
If you want to search for it, for sure, then it's a one-off. And maybe I will try it in Hogak as a 4/4 instead of Satyr Wayfinder. Because that card was always so underwhelming to me.
Yeah, it's kind of the minimum that you have to have.
Yeah, that's true. And so the next card we really have to analyze here.
You mean you have to analyze the Polish.
Or the Poland.
I'm
don't
sorry.
Know if you say it, how you say this in English, actually. In German, we would say Poland.
It should be similar.
I don't know, actually. It's written the same. But this card is kind of interesting because it's for 1 green, a sorcery, which is basically a basic land card tutor. Basic land card tutor. And if you delve, evidence 8 is basically delve 8.
No, evidence 8 is you have to exile cards from your graveyard with a combined greater mana cost than 8.
Okay, so Delve with converted mana cost with CMC.
So basically, mm-hmm. if you have, for example, not in this deck, Force of Will in the Days in your graveyard and the Ponder, you exile those three cards, and then you have 5 plus 2 plus 1 is 8. You have evidence 8.
And then you can search your library for a creature or any land card. And
exactly. Put into your hand.
I don't think it will make waves in Legacy. I'm pretty sure that it won't even get played. Maybe some people will try it out.
Yeah. It could be more like a Commander.
For a Commander, for sure. This card will be for sure played in for Commander.
Maybe it's something that Green Post wants as an additional Green Sun Zenith that also can get lands, but you kind of need to enable it like one or two creatures already in your graveyard, so it's kind of hard to enable it because it's so bad at the early stages, but only kind of okay at the later stages.
It's not so bad. Decks like Green Post often struggle with having green mana.
Yeah.
The only downside here is that it costs green.
Yeah, you need green mana to get green mana. So
does Green Post play Spirit Guides?
Yeah.
Okay, then it makes definitely more sense. Do they play, how's it called?
Mox Diamond? No.
No, not Mox Diamond. Once Upon a Time. To fix the land.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Hmm. Be I can see this as a one-off in as a fifth Green Sun Zenith,
yeah.
That also fixes your mana base a little bit and fixes your problems with having green mana.
And the Blood Moon, if you exile the Elvish Spirit Guide, you get the basic
forest,
then you have the green mana. There is some stuff that can.
There's application, but. That's the only way I can see this. I mean, we have a lot more potent tutors in the format that don't get played.
That's true. But about potent cards.
You really want to do this right now?
Yeah.
Okay. This card is insane. We have a new... we have now a new archetype.
It's a new big player in the format. It's... Maybe also a reference to a card game. It's not cards. It's Slimes Against Humanity, which is a sorcery. You create an OO, Green Ooze creature token with Trample. And then you put X plus one counters on it. And X is 2 plus the total of Slime Against Humanity in your graveyard and your exile. You can have any number of Slime Against Humanity in your deck. Do you know which card perfectly combos with it?
Surgical Extraction?
No. It costs 3 and it taps for a colorless.
Costs 3 and taps for a colorless.
And if you have it in your opening hand, you can exile your whole hand instead of mulliganing.
Serum Powder. So you basically exile your hands all the time, and then you just play turn one slime with Tomb Petal Slime, and then have
You can exile it to Chromox. It's also an exile if you want to talk about it like that.
Oh, yeah. That's why I said we have a new archetype. I mean, this sounds kind of great, actually. It just seems funny. Funny as hell.
I think Jax put out the deck with it, with like the Soul Lands, the Chromox, and the... How is the exile card called? Serum Powder. I mean, it looks great. You're playing like 34, I think, of those. And you're playing 4 Scavenging Ooze.
Do you also play Eve? Does this deck play Eve? Don't tell me this deck doesn't play Eve.
This deck doesn't play Eve.
Ah, that's such a flavor miss right there. Every deck needs a fun slot, in my opinion. And
you can play it in the sideboard.
Yeah, it's okay. It needs a fun slot. And for such a ooze deck, needs Eve, the progenitor ooze, yeah?
Yeah, the only downside is, like, you're playing a Stomper deck, with a storm finisher.
It's more like your companion. It brings you luck. Okay. You must see it like that.
It's your good luck
charm. Jorgen is a bad card and people still are playing it.
Because it's a free card.
Yeah. That doesn't change anything about it. You need 80 cards. I will die on this hill and Daniel is already here right now.
No, we won't play Jorgen. But yeah, Slam Against Humanity. Really, really sweet card. I hope we see some events being crashed by it.
Yeah, and also a really expensive card. I mean, MTG Goldfish say something like $5.
Five to six,
I mean.
It's insane.
For a common, I mean, this price will for sure drop. We'll take a short look at card market to just get at the prices for Europe.
And hopefully less than six.
Yeah, about two euros or something. But still, I mean, that's even one euro for a common is really, really great. So there's a lot of value in this set. It's like these Shadowborn Apostles and these Perilous Precisioners and these cards where you can have
Shadowborn was like really expensive because it was like way
it
before
it was the first card that was like that. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. And it was like so sweet. There were commander, a little bit of the hiccup without any reprints of it, because like guys played like 50 Shadowborn Apostles in their commander deck, and only the big finishers afterwards. So it's you kind of need those.
And I think if you need this, you have to pick your poison actually.
I think so too, but. Which is your person? An enchantment, an artifact, or a flying creature?
All of them, actually, because who needs a Murktide? Nobody.
You can only choose one. So, yeah, pick your poison. It's one green for sorcery with each opponent sacrificing an artifact or an enchantment or a creature with flying. If it would have been an instant, the card would be insane.
Yep.
Dumped
better
that
than
large.
Run the foul, but now it. I mean, it's a nice. It gets around any kind of hexproof, any kind of protection or something, because it says each opponent.
Yeah.
It's like a sacrifice effect, like all of these. And but it's sorcery speed.
It's sorcery speed, but it has some applications. I mean, if you're playing against control, for example, they may have a carpet of flowers lying around. If you're playing against painter, they have maybe an artifact creature or a fable of the mirror breaker. Not a flying creature, but yeah, Delver has the flying creature. You don't target them. I mean, they don't really have anything that stops you from targeting them.
I can see it against Rack Delver or Rack Beanstalk Delver. Does this deck still exist? With Questing Druid?
I mean...
No, they don't play Questing Druid. No.
No, they don't play Beanstalk. They only play Questing Druid.
Yeah, okay. I mean, in a Delver deck with Beanstalk, I could see this as a hate card for this, because it hits Murktide, Chandelier, and Beanstalk.
Especially
and it trades up in mana, which is kind of great. But
I mean, Beanstalk already drew a card, but yeah, it's still a card that...
It's still better than if you Prismatic Ending a Beanstalk.
It feels
so bad. You trade 2-for-1 and also 2-for-2 mana. It's just, you don't even have a mana advantage. And with this, you at least have a little bit of mana advantage.
Yeah, that's true.
Which makes it not that bad. But yeah, I don't think Pick Your Poison is better than something like Wilt or the green card that's also free modes with...
But it was played
with exile, with where you exile one card and it was an instant. It's like destroy target artifact, destroy target enchantment, or exile a card from a graveyard.
Yeah, it was like from
First Eldraine.
Yeah,
but I don't know the name right now.
It's called. But yeah, one other thing is like Long Goodbye, and Long Goodbye is a really, really interesting instant for one and a black. It has the very specific text on it. This spell can't be countered. And destroy target creature or planeswalker with mana value 3 or less.
It's basically a single colored Abrupt Decay.
It's a single colored
Abrupt Decay. Slightly worse single colored.
Slightly worse, yeah.
Yeah, because Abrupt Decay exists, I don't actually see this card really being played.
Okay.
The clause here also, or it's also too narrow in my opinion. Yeah, you can kill a Teferi, but you could also kill a Teferi with Abrupt Decay. The only thing here is if you're Esper colored, then this might make sense. But then I would also argue Voidrend is a card.
Yeah.
Which target is can't be countered, targets any permanent for 3 mana. I mean, for sure, for Esper colors, which is pretty hard to get by.
Yeah.
At first, I thought Long Goodbye was just black. Yeah. Just one black mana. And then it would be...
insane.
I can't say this here. It would be... oh my gosh!
It would be, like, the perfect replacement for Fatal Push.
Yeah, because I was under the impression that Long Goodbye was just one black for the last half an hour or something, and now I'm looking at it, it was just one and a black, and I was like, well, now it's not that good anymore.
It's kind of okay. We may see it in, like, the mono-black decks, like mono-black Stompy and stuff like that, but...
yeah, maybe because they still want to play Chalice. So yeah. It gets around Chalice, which makes it not so bad anymore.
Which would also be great if it cost one. But yeah, I think we want to go back to our roots, and our roots are Dredge. And we have Insidious Roots, which is creature token you control have tap, add one mana of any color, which is like perfectly fine Dredge card, am I right? But it also has the text with, whenever one or more creature cards leave your graveyard, create a 0/1 green plant creature token, then put a 1/1/+1 counter on each plant you control. And boy, do you know cards like, how do I say this? Which is the 3/1 that exiles a creature, a black card from a graveyard, and then it enters the battlefield?
Wait. It exiles a black card from your graveyard and then it enters the battlefield.
In your upkeep.
An Ikarid.
Because an Ikarid exiles a black card from your graveyard.
Yeah.
Then you gain the plant token. Then it comes back from the graveyard. You get another plant token. And then you haven't even dredged for the turn. Then you have a 3/4. A 2/3.
A 3/1 and a... yeah.
No, you have a 3/4, a 2/4, a 2/3, and a 1/2. This one single step.
I mean, I get where you're coming from, but it's just not. It doesn't cut it.
It's a win more. Am I right?
It doesn't cut. It's not really a win more. It doesn't go into the dredge theme. Actually, it's too slow. It's an enchantment. It gets handled pretty easily. The mana costs are pretty restrictive. I can see this more in like something like a Sombardment or a Hogak maybe list, something like that. Not dredge is a totally different beast. Totally different. I like the idea, but I think that we could build something that's a little bit more interesting, because it says every time a creature card leaves the battlefield, so leaves the graveyard. So imagine something like you dredge, or you put your library into your graveyard, and then you make like how is it called, Soul Guide Lantern or something, and exile everything. Yeah. And then it's like, well, now I have all these plant tokens. They don't have Defender. They are insanely big.
You only get the trigger once if you exile it for the whole time.
Okay. Now it's not that good anymore.
Then
you would need something like Gravecrawler, Vengevines, maybe more the Hogak style.
Maybe the Madness route, but it's also restrictive mana base-wise.
No. I definitely don't see this in Madness. It's win more for Hogak style decks. Before I would play this, I would always play Altar of Dementia.
I should try this in Painter.
No, you're ridiculous. classic.
You kind of
explain. I want to know this.
You have a Goblin Beldame there. You target the creature in your graveyard and an artifact on your battlefields. You trade. You get a plant token. You do it on the next turn. You get another plant token. You get a plant token for every turn. It's so bad.
Yeah, it's not really good. it's a lot better if you pair it with Bloodgust and Gravecrawler.
True.
I mean, if you have any kind of a Karen feeder, something. a Karen feeder with a Bloodgust gives you a lot of...
I misheard a little bit. I heard a Karen feeder. But yeah, the card is sweet, but...
I will for sure get me some copies, because this sounds pretty fun to build around. But I actually know that I will go 1-4 or 0-5 in that Friday Night Magic that I will play it.
Seems great. And one last thing that we have here on the board is like the writer of the story. It's the crime novelist, which is a goblin bard. It's a 1/3 for 2 and a red. And has the beautiful text, whenever you sacrifice an artifact, put the +1/+1 counter on Crime Novelist and add 1 red to your mana pool. And this one is especially sweet if you have like some treasure shenanigans. It grows really big, it adds some mana. It can be something like a Storm Engine or something like that.
I mean, we had the fall of Mono Red Storm. Because Besiege got printed, I don't see this anywhere here. Because, Besiege is just so much better. Besiege single-handedly killed the whole archetype of Mono Red Storm. In my opinion, there's no reason anymore to play a Storm list or a Storm focus deck that doesn't run Besiege.
Yeah, and it basically made everything in Storm that costs above 4 invalidated.
Yeah, but that's a different topic here.
But Besiege made a pretty restriction on how Storm can be. And Storm is currently kind of okay in the meta, too good.
Yeah, I hope that it would be a little bit better, that it would be more of a tier contender. Unfortunately, Storm is always just so B tier.
It's always there, but never great.
Unfortunately, yeah. And this crime novelist would have made waves if Besiege wouldn't have been printed, because Mono Red Storm...
You have to sacrifice an artifact for each of those, not for every spell you cast. So, but together...
But you play so many Lotus Petals, you play... so many other artifacts.
Lotus Petal, Lines and Diamond, for sure. Then you have like, how's a card called? Maybe in Mono Red Storm you played the one for 1 red, you make a treasure, for 3 red, you kind of flash it back.
I know what you're thinking of. And also I can see this, they play Baubles. I think all 8 Baubles.
Yeah.
And that would have been instant slot here, because 8 Baubles is great. Or with Riddler.
Yeah.
Riddler is also pretty much gone because of Besiege. Although it was a very funny deck, but I could have seen this also in Riddler with all the amount of artifact sacrificing that they were doing.
Yeah. But I think we want to kind of close in on the Ravnica Murder session.
Yeah, it was a little bit longer than I thought, actually. We had some good ideas.
Yeah. Do you want to shortly talk about
We, for sure, I mean, we are a legacy podcast. We have to talk about the legacy matter and, yeah, how things shaped up. I mean, me and Daniel, when we talked the last time, we talked about the big, big player now in the room. At first, it wasn't so such a big contender, but now it's basically everywhere, and that's Buck Beanstalk.
Yeah, the Pokemoki pile striked again. And, yeah, Buck is like the big player currently in the format. It's the big shakeup that we kind of had since the Eternal Weekends. And Buck basically started it around Eternal Weekends, late November, start of December. And yeah, nowadays it's the most played deck according to MTG Gold.
Premier control deck, actually. It surpassed four color control by a lot. And I also think it's better than four color control.
One thing that we kind of have to add here is like there's a little bit of discussion if Buck would not be so present if they could play
Triumph of St. Catherine.
Triumph of St. Catherine as another finisher, but it would make the mana situation worse and stuff like that. So it's mostly the only meta. One thing, as a painter player myself, I have to say, Buck is such a hard and difficult matchup. They have so many answers to your threats. You won't have any creatures left over after turn 3, turn 4, most likely. And then you have to kind of scramble the eggs and try to somehow get through it. It's insane how good this deck is.
I gotta admit, I'm not a painter player, but it feels kind of good. Because Painter was so insanely good all the time now, for the last half year or so.
Yeah, we basically had so little bad matchups. Yeah, it was insane.
It was really insane. Every time I faced a Painter, it was like, well, I can't do anything about you. It's just, I can try to race for a quick win. And if I stumble only a little bit, I'm dead. And if they have the combo turn two, I'm dead. And it's just like, yeah, I think it's kind of good that Painter has gotten a slap on the wrist and it's like, know your place.
Yeah, I mean, Painter is still good, but it's now a little bit of a different meta, even though the meta is kind of set in place currently. We don't have any new really big introductions beside of Buck Beanstalk since like Beanstalk got printed.
Yeah, basically since Eternal Weekend, the meta is pretty stale actually.
And now we have a really good question that we actually want you to answer to in our like Spotify answer question mark. You will find
thingy,
it.
Yeah.
Do you think a stale meta means a good meta? Do you think a stale meta means a bad meta? What is your stance currently?
At first, I think you have to define the stale meta. A stale meta can be good and can be bad, because Ragavan meta was stale, and it was horrendous. It was just not fun. It was just extremely bad meta. In my opinion, this still meta now is kind of switching gears all the time. It rotates internally. It's not. It's like a sea
with ebb and flow.
Yeah, with ebb and flow, or that's really like a mirror on top. You know, there are some movements under the surface, even though you don't see it. I haven't felt this way with Renan 6, with Oko, with Dreadnought Arcanist, with Ragavan, with Expressive Iteration. In my opinion, these matters always felt like I had to stay at the water metaphors. It's like you had the water fall in your face, and everything you did just didn't matter. No umbrella, no swimsuit, no life vest. It was everything was just fucked from the beginning. And now it's like you know that there's movement, you know that there are things happening, but you don't really see them until they are surfacing.
Yeah, currently it's like the meta we have here is, I think, good. I think you can have a lot of fun with various different archetypes. You can play something like Infect. Sam Dams always has good results. You can play Green White Depths. You can play lands in the meta. You can play Control. You can play the back deck. You can play Painter. You can play Initiative. You can play Stompy. You can play Goblins. maybe try Devon Texas, but there are a lot of different decks that you can currently play in the format. And I think this is a sign of a good meta. The problem we have with the, as you already spoken about, the Raghavan meta is like, there was not really anything else that you can do.
Yeah.
But currently we have a lot of different playstyles that are enabled in our meta. And yeah, I like the meta.
Yeah, me too. I also have to add here, these kind of stale metas are the perfect breeding pool to try new archetypes, to try new strategies. Yeah, it's not like something is that oppressive, like Expressive Iteration or Raghavan, or yeah, these kind of decks that you simply can't gear against. It simply didn't work, and now because the meta is so stale, you have to break it open for yourself. And I think if you do this, you will have so much fun. And there are a lot of things you can do. You can try Slime Against Humanity Stompy. or just play the new Hogek list from Nemo Squads. Yeah. This is a deck that I for sure will try, will play. When I make my next hurray into the league.
And for example, something like the new Hogak deck is like, you have to innovate in such a meta because it's like a little bit stale. Everyone will know the stock lists. And if you can have the surprising factor to it,
the tiniest advantage,
it's like really, really sick. And yeah, we want to see that.
For sure, for sure. So I think maybe this question is pretty self-explanatory. If you disagree with us, simply tell us in the comments, tell us on Instagram or Twitter,
basically. Or Facebook.
Yeah, basically everywhere. You can also give us feedback on these platforms, and you can even write an email. It's in-response@gmx.at. So if you want to reach out to us, there are a lot of ways to do. And if you like what we are doing, consider following us on every social media. It's @response_legacy. You can find Daniel on Twitter. His X is @FlyingDelver. Peter, where can we find you?
We don't forget our Patreon. If you want to subscribe, we would. Thank you guys a lot. And you can find me on X.com, previously known as Twitter. It's @UnicornLord. The O in the Lord is a zero. And where can we find you, Philip?
As always, on Twitter, I won't use the name. It's FinnickMTG, @FinnickMTG, PHINEKMTG. And as I already mentioned, also follow our sister project @Austrian_Legacy to be up to date for Austrian Legacy Masters. And if you can't attend this magical tournament, then just reach out to us or just hop into Twitch. We will stream the whole event like we did last year.
So, in response,
the end.
This was In Response, a Legacy podcast. If you enjoyed the ride, feel free to support the show by following leaving a review, or subscribe on Patreon.com/spans_legacy.